Well, Dave just gave us a really nice summary of the planets, and I'm going to talk about two of them, or the giant gas planets, Jupiter and Saturn. I'm going to show you some computer simulations, but the main point I want to make is that there's a condition, actually something that Dave and his colleagues are in the process of publishing right now, a condition that the second law of thermodynamics provides for a constraint on the computer simulations. And this is what I'll give to these examples. Basically, we want to be able to have constraints that will tell us how realistic or how good the computer simulations of a dynamo are. Certainly, you can look on the surface and get information about the luminosity, the internal luminosity of Jupiter, for example, and the fact that there's more heat flux coming out at higher latitudes. You can look at the zonal winds on the surface of Jupiter, their banded structure, the fact that in the equatorial region, the winds are blowing eastward, and the magnetic fields intensity. So these certainly provide constraints, but we'd like to be able to have some constraints on the flows and the fields below the surfaces. I'm going to show you some computer simulations. I won't go through this in any detail. Many of you have seen all this. This is very similar to many of the other dynamo simulations for the Earth and the Sun and giant planets. It's a 3D and MHD simulation using the anelastic approximation, which is particularly important for giant planets because of the ability to incorporate the effects of a density stratification. I'm also not going to show you much of this. You've seen these equations. Sasha Bruin has talked about this earlier this week. They're essentially the same set of fluid equations, MHD equations. But what I want to do is focus on the thermodynamic variables that have a bar above them. These are the reference state variables. In other words, in the anelastic approximation, what you normally do is set up a reference state that's a function of radius and possibly a slow function of time, and then you solve for the perturbations relative to that, the three-dimensional time-dependent perturbations. So for the case of Jupiter or Saturn, you want to be able to put in a fairly realistic density profile and temperature profile. So what I've been doing is using a model by Tristan Guyot, and as you just heard from Dave, these things are still uncertain, but he has a one-dimensional evolutionary model, so that provides a one-dimensional reference state in radius for my model. So temperature, density, and pressure, these plots are all versus radius from the center to the surface of Jupiter, showing how these three thermodynamic variables vary in radius. Also noting that for radii in the outer 20% of Jupiter, a perfect gas is a fairly good approximation. Below that, electron degeneracy sets in and you have somewhat a different equation at stake. So this is all part of Tristan's model, and he can afford to have much more resolution and radius, much better physics than we can afford in the three-dimensional model. What I've done is picked an inner and outer boundary for a computer simulation, an inner radius of about 7 times 10 to the 9 centimeters, and an outer radius, which certainly is arbitrary. You don't go quite to the surface. Here, the variation in density is only about a factor of the simulations I'm going to show here are actually more than a year old now. I'm continually evolving these models. Right now I'm working on a model that basically I moved the surface out a little ways, and now the density variation is closer to 170 times greater density at the bottom compared to the top. So I use this as my background reference state, and but in addition to the density stratification, what's important for Jupiter as again Dave pointed out, is that the electrical conductivity in the semiconducting region, in the outer roughly 80% of, or outer 20% of the radius, is a very, very strong function of depth. The electrical conductivity increases by many orders of magnitude from the surface down to a radius of roughly 84% of the radius of Jupiter. And then current theory is that it's relatively constant with radius below that. Again, as Dave mentioned, these are uncertain grounds, but you can, in other words, the magnetic diffusivity, which is inversely proportional to the electrical conductivity, so if the electrical conductivity is increasing with depth, the magnetic diffusivity is going to be decreasing with depth. This is nicely explained in a paper that's about to come out by Dave and his colleagues. Junjun Liu was actually here for a day or so at the beginning of this program, and she talked about this model. So what I've done for the three-dimensional model is made a very simple approximation. I'm saying the magnetic diffusivity is somewhat like an it basically increases with radius exponentially on a log plot. It's relatively constant in the interior and then increases. And I've set the extreme values, in other words, the magnetic diffusivity at the outer boundary is about four orders of magnitude larger than it is at the inner boundary. So then, the problem with this simulation and with essentially all the simulations, certainly for giant planets, is that we're forced to use thermal and viscous diffusivities that are much larger than the realistic molecular values. So we're basically treating them as very crude approximations of turbulent diffusion. And as a result, in order, if you want to get realistic zonal winds at the surface, realistic magnetic fields, you have to drive the convection model harder in order to compensate for the additional thermal and viscous diffusion. So the luminosity in the actual model is larger than Jupiter's luminosity, because I want to be able to get zonal winds at the surface and magnetic fields at the surface that are in the right ballpark. However, if you want to, this is going back to the constraint I was talking about, if you want to check to see how well the velocities are below the surface in the model, so we can't observe these, but there's this constraint that the rate that entropy is being produced by Ohmic heating, so if you integrate over the volume, the current density squared divided by the electrical conductivity is the rate that rate of Ohmic heating, and then if you divide that by the temperature, you get the rate that entropy is being produced. So you can figure out the entire rate that entropy is being produced within the convection zone, within the boundaries of your model, and then that amount of entropy should be no larger than the luminosity observed on Jupiter times this factor. In other words, we know the luminosity of the surface, we know the surface temperature of Jupiter, and we can estimate what an internal temperature is. That's certainly going to depend on the radius, your inner boundary radius. But it sets a limit on how much entropy can be produced by Ohmic heating. And then if you say that most of the Ohmic heating, there'll be other dissipation. There'll be viscous heating and other sources like thermal diffusion. But the major source of entropy production, which probably be due to Ohmic heating. And so if you say if most of that's occurring near the bottom of the convection zone, where the electrical conductivity is higher, then if you say that temperature, take the temperature outside the integral and say it's closer to the temperature at the inner boundary, then you can put a limit on the actual Ohmic heating. The Ohmic heating then should no longer be should be no greater than the luminosity at the surface times this factor. And this factor can be on the order of 40 or so, depending on what you choose for the inner temperature. Just to go into a little bit more detail, this is something that we talked about, I should say, Chris Jones and Uli Christensen and Paul Roberts and I discussed this after Junjun Liu came here and talked about this. So this is the story, and this has actually been written, published back in 1975 by these two papers. But the idea is this: is if the rate that entropy flows out of the system, like at the surface of Jupiter, should be equal to the rate that flows in, wherever you define what the input radius is, plus the rate that's being produced by dissipation. So the rate that flows out is this first fraction, the heat flux at the surface divided by the temperature of the surface. The rate that flows in is the heat flux at that location divided by the temperature at that location. And then add in all the sources of entropy production. So the major one is this Ohmic heating source. And like I said, there's also a viscous heating source and thermal diffusion, but they probably are small. And then if you say that the flux in is going to be roughly equal to the flux out, the heat flux, assuming that most of the energy generation is produced below that by compression. And then if you also say that this source of ohmic heating can be written as the total ohmic heating rate, in other words, this integral other than this temperature, the total ohmic heating rate inside the convection zone, divided by a temperature close to the temperature that most of the ohmic heating will be occurring at, in other words, something close to the inner temperature, you substitute these two things into that expression, you get this limit, that the total ohmic heating inside the convection zone should be no larger than the flux coming out times this factor. And that factor can be, like I said, on the order of 40 or so. So it's interesting. It's an interesting concept that you actually could be generating ohmic heating at a rate faster than the heat's coming out of the surface. It's basically being recycled. The heating can be produce buoyancy, drive further convection, which will generate more magnetic field and keep being used over and over. So, but this is the constraint that could be applied to computer simulations. But it's based on the assumption that most of the magnetic field is generated in this thin layer. And the idea here is that it's a layer where the magnetic Reynolds number is going to be largest. And the magnetic Reynolds number, the velocity times the depth, the electrical conductivity, and the magnetic permeability, the thing is that in Jupiter, the velocities are going to be decreased, and the convective velocities, which are generating the 5, 10. These velocities are going to be decreasing with depth because density increases with depth, and then the conductivity is going to be increasing with depth. So there's a competition there. This is a snapshot from an older computer simulation of mine where you're looking at the equatorial plane and the kinetic energy. Most of the kinetic energy occurs in the outer layer. This is actually small because I've imposed a stable atmosphere on the top. But most of the kinetic energy is occurring here. And if you look at where the magnetic energy occurs, there's this relatively thin layer where the velocities are still large enough and the electrical conductivities are high enough. So let me show you just very quickly the simulations I wanted to, the results. This shows you all the parameters. This is a snapshot of the entropy perturbation near the surface, showing that you have warmer regions, higher heat flux in the higher latitudes, which sort of agrees with the observations. The heat flux from Jupiter is fairly independent of latitude, but it's receiving much more from the sun at lower latitudes. This agrees, I believe, with the solar simulations and also with many of the other Jupiter simulations. You can look at a slice through the equatorial plane where, most of the entropy perturbations are near the surface where the density scale heights are the smallest. and you get plumes or trajectories that are tilted. This occurs because as fluid rises, it expands, produces a vorticity, and the vorticity is generated faster as it moves closer to or through smaller and smaller density scale heights. This is actually what maintains the differential rotation. You have prograde angular momentum being transported to the surface and retrograde being transported inwards. If you look through a meridian plane, so the south pole here and north pole, and you plot the z component, the component of vorticity parallel to the rotation axis, you see many small scale vortices that are not necessarily connected. The yellow represents the cyclonic vortices, and the green and blue represent the anticyclonic vortices. So they're very small, they're time dependent, they're disconnected, but when they all average together, you get an axisymmetric zone of wind that's fairly constant on cylinders, very large scale. This is what the pattern looks like at the surface. So you get the large equatorial acceleration with bands and latitude. You can compare that to observations. This is sort of embarrassing since I started with a Jupiter model and I got something that looked more like Saturn. That's why I continue to run this simulation, and I want to include more density scale heights. But these are the observations. The line is Voyager observation of the zonal winds relative to the background magnetic field in Saturn. The dots are the more recent observations from the Hubble spacecraft, showing that there is a large change in the peak velocity here. This is my simulation showing banded structures and the large equatorial acceleration. Finally, the magnetic field, well, I should go back one here. The magnetic field likes to come in parallel to these surfaces of constant angular velocity. It tends to avoid ohmic dissipation by being parallel to these lines, opposed to being perpendicular to it. And so the solution just tends to do that. Most of the magnetic field, the radial magnetic field at the surface, is occurring at high latitudes. And also, if you do this integral that I was telling you about, the rate that entropy is being produced, you can do that numerically, and it turns out to be roughly about an order of magnitude smaller than what you'd expect it to be, or the limit that Jupiter would describe. So I think I'll quit there.
So we have some time for discussion.
You are, of course, right that the total dissipation in Jupiter can be larger than the luminosity. The interesting thing is that if you take the Hewitt, Weiss, and McKenzie approach and remove the constraint that they use to get a rigid condition on the outcome by having no vertical velocity, and then use as your control volume only the shell that contains ohmic dissipation in our model, for example, then of course T in and T out are not very different from each other for that shell, because in our model the ohmic dissipation all takes place in a layer thinner than the scale height. Now that doesn't say that the ohmic dissipation has to be less than the luminosity, but what's interesting is that you can then look at the equations and ask, how could it be that the ohmic dissipation is larger than the luminosity? And if you look at the various terms, what you realize is that the only way to do it is by importing kinetic energy, which means there has to be a net divergence of the kinetic energy associated with the zonal flow. So it's as if the zonal flow further out in the planet were being imported into the region of large ohmic dissipation in order to do a lot of extra work. And I think that's the thing that you might wish to look at in the models to see whether that's what's actually happening, because I think that's the way in which you could get a much larger ohmic dissipation. I should also say, by the way, that you mentioned a factor of 40. I think it's really, if you do it right, it's really, because that's only an upper bound, it's really more like the number of scale heights. And the total number of temperature scale heights in Jupiter is only 6. And I think that's actually the multiplier, because I'm not disputing the result you wrote down. It's a rigorous result. But if you actually go beyond the bound and think about the actual numbers, it's really like a set of heat engines in series, one per scale height, and in each of those you can do a dissipation of order the luminosity. I would suggest to you that the dissipation that's done in the outermost few scale heights of Jupiter is not ohmic. It's viscous.
Oh,
there's no problem
certain.
In having it being viscous.
But that's
an issue that your models can address.
Absolutely. No, I agree that the surfaces are the surfaces that I call in and out are going to be arbitrary. And you could make them very close together and look at what ohmic dissipation is occurring there. And likewise, you're right. If I talk about the surface, then I should be including the viscous dissipation there in addition to the ohmic dissipation.
That theorem, I mean, it's tempting to say ohmic dissipation dominates, but of course, in a region where the magnetic field is dynamically unimportant, it's more likely to be viscous, very small.
Mm-hmm. The main point is that there is this constraint that helps computer simulations know if they're in the right ballpark.
Yeah.
It's not a sufficient condition, but it's certainly a necessary condition.
Yeah.
If you don't satisfy it, then you know something's wrong.
Sasha?
So if I understand, your magnetic diffusivity is varying by four orders of magnitude in this later
correct.
Model.
Correct.
And so your magnetic Reynolds number as well.
Well, yeah.
So how do you manage
I didn't give a magnetic Reynolds number. You'd have to look. Since the diffusivity changes by four orders of magnitude and the velocities change with depth, you have to define the Reynolds number a little more carefully. Is it a volume average, and what length scale do you use?
Yeah, but usually if you use the thickness of your shell, and let's say yes, you could use your RMS velocity or something like that. I agree, you can make one that varies function of radius, but still.
Well, you get a large Reynolds number, magnetic Reynolds number, if you use the largest velocity at the surface. And the smallest.
No, I'm not saying to do that, but I'm just saying that by having such a large variability of your diffusivity, so I'm wondering if numerically you can maintain such a large variation if you don't have starting to have some issues with the magnetic field when you have very low values at the bottom of the shell.
Yeah. Well, they're not. Well, lower than I do because then I would have. This is an evolving. Simulation that's been going on for many years.
Final question, Fausto?
It sounds terrible, but it's not that bad. It means that you have a difference of a little over 100 between your brain.
It means that you have a difference of order of 100 in your gradients, 10 to the 4 difference in diffusivity when you put it in there, turns into a factor of 100. Your thinnest things are 100s, your thickest things, which doesn't sound so terrible.
Most of it is not a dynamo, so you only have to resolve a bit.
Okay, so we need to move on now. Thank you, Gary, again.
Thank you.